Hello and welcome to Everyday Oral Surgery. This is your host, Dr. Grant Stuckey. I am an oral and maxillofacial surgeon practicing in Denver, Colorado. The goal of this podcast is to connect, learn, and inspire. In this podcast, you'll be hearing from OMS surgeons all over the globe discussing ways to improve the practice of oral and maxillofacial surgery. Most information shared in this podcast will be based on personal experience and opinions, so please supplement what you learn here with approved research studies. If you are a regular follower of the podcast, please go to our website, everydayoralsurgery.com, and register to receive newsletters and find links to our social media accounts. Most importantly, if you would like to be interviewed on the podcast or know someone who you'd like to hear from, or if there's a topic you'd like to hear about, please email me at grantstuckey@gmail.com. Without further ado, please enjoy today's episode. All right, welcome to another episode. Today I'm with Dr. Benjamin Heckler. He's an oral and maxillofacial surgeon practicing in North Carolina. Ben, thank you so much for joining us on the episode today.
Thanks, Grant. I'm glad to be back after a series of illnesses in my family that have been oh so fun, as you know.
Yeah. Jeez, man. I feel like once you have kids, you're definitely getting more illnesses passing through the family. There's always school stuff that gets passed around and all that. So, well, good. I wanted to talk to you today, kind of not a real glamorous topic, but I've been kind of reviewing articles, and there was kind of two different articles in the past 3 or 4 years that talked about Articaine. And I know there's just tons of anecdotal stuff that happens in the community with using it, not using it, you know. So I thought it would be good to tackle this, even though these are, one was 2019, one was 21, so 3 to 5 years ago. But I think a lot of us practicing kind of were trained maybe 5, 10, 15 plus years ago, and some people just kind of stick with what they knew in dental school. So I thought it'd be a good topic.
Absolutely.
Yeah, maybe the first one we could talk about is, you know, I think when a lot of us who were trained over 7, 8 years ago in dental school, the thought was that Articaine has this potentially increased risk of causing, you know, nerve injury. So to not do, especially I think a lot of us are thinking, don't block with septocaine because that could potentially injure the infralabellar nerve. And so we found this article from 2021, you know, and the question is, does the use of Articaine increase the risk of hypesthesia in lower third molar surgery? It's a systematic review. But yeah, basically they're looking at several articles that, you know, they excluded those that were not randomized controlled trials. There's several other rigorous kind of criteria. Looks like altogether they included 13 articles that met their rigorous criteria for the systematic review, and a total of 886 third molars were kind of looked at. 436 of those used 4% Articaine, and 430 used other local anesthetics, the vast majority of which were 2% Lido with Epi. And then, you know, lots of kind of looking at what these various articles said, their kind of conclusion was that there was no, let's see here, let me just read what they said. Let's see here. It's associated, so acceptable anesthetic for the extraction of these teeth is Articaine. It's a good diffusion to the soft tissues. It's associated with increased incidence of hypesthesia, meaning people kind of associate it in their mind, but their study found that there was no significant evidence to show that it caused nerve injury. And I guess there was a total of 4 reports of nerve injury, and of those 4, looks like none of them were permanent injuries. Most were reported. 3 were for sure temporary, and 1 was kind of not reported. And so basically they're saying in the end, you know, presence of permanent hypesthesia was not confirmed with septocaine or Articaine, and that it is a good alternative because it has, you know, good types of functions that can potentially excel where lidocaine does not. What was your thoughts on this paper?
Yeah, I like this paper for a couple reasons, and I'll kind of, I guess, give my overview as well, Grant, and then we may have a couple of specific points we want to discuss further. But the first good thing about this paper is not only is it a systematic review and meta-analysis, but it's a systematic review of randomized controlled trials only, which is always nice, because many times systematic reviews, if the evidence isn't there, you have to include a bunch of retrospective studies too. I mean, I've done systematic reviews where that's been the case, and then you know that your evidence base is poor to begin with. So even though it's a systematic review, making conclusions is difficult if you're not using only prospective studies. But here they're only able, they only have to use randomized controlled trials. So that's great. I agree with you. You know, they did a good job. The risk of bias in all the articles that they reviewed was relatively low. That was all good. You know, a lot of these were split mouth, which is great. And, you know, really, hypesthesia is not really that subjective, which is good. I mean, if someone says this now feels different and it's been a week after, well, that's probably hypesthesia, paresthesia. So, I mean, this overall, the studies that they included, I think were good. And I agree with what you summarized with regard to the conclusions. And, you know, there are a couple things I think to put into consideration here as well. So if you look at the numbers in this study, basically they looked at the relative risk, right, of having a temporary nerve injury, because like you said, none of them were reported to be permanent. But what's the relative risk of having a temporary nerve injury when you do a block with the articaine instead of lidocaine? Now, they included some other anesthetics too, but they also compared iodocaine just to lidocaine. And in their results, it says when studies with comparison between articaine and lidocaine were selected, the relative risk was 4.5%, which you think, whoa, you know, 4.5 times more likely with articaine. But then the confidence interval is between 0.54 and 37.26. So first of all, that tells you it's not statistically significant. So that's why they're saying there's no difference. But you know, the other thing that it tells you when the confidence interval is so wide is that maybe there aren't enough incidences. Maybe the N for this study, it, you know, would, if it was higher, give us a clearer picture of if there's a true relative risk. So someone could easily talk about this article and say, well, hey, one of the weaknesses here is that you didn't have enough participants, although the number of molars was pretty high. But I agree that the conclusion of this study is that, hey, we don't have objective evidence from the highest level of type of study that we've done that there is truly a higher risk of doing this with articaine. Now, like you said, all the temporary paresthesia, hypesthesia events were in fact from articaine. That being said, I think all of us have probably experienced temporary events too from using lidocaine. The question then becomes, and they have mentioned this in their discussion, you know, to what degree is it due just to the local anesthetic choice? And to what degree is it due to other factors? You know, did you nick the nerve with the needle? Was there compression of the lingual nerve? Did you have a bite block that slipped onto the floor of the mouth and compressed the lingual nerve for 30 minutes? You know, that could be it too. And you're never going to be able to tease those out completely. But I think to the best that we can for a systematic review, this did a really good job of showing, hey, using the best evidence we have, we still can't prove that articaine definitively causes more permanent or even temporary paresthetic events as compared to lidocaine.
Yep. All right. Yeah. I mean, good comments. Good point to bring up that maybe if we're talking about, so they talked about 886 third molars. Maybe if we're talking about, you know, 20, 30, 40,000, maybe we do start seeing something there. But at least with that amount, there's really no risk.
And that goes to the point too, you know, you're talking about 20, 30,000. And this is the point that's been made before, is that, hey, even if there is an absolute risk with articaine, that is increased. Let's say the relative risk is actually two or threefold. So two or threefold more likely to cause a nerve injury with articaine. If you look on an absolute scale, it is still extraordinarily small, very likely. So again, let's say they did 20 or 30,000 molars. Well, if they had, you know, like 80 events with articaine and 40 events with lidocaine, in overall, that's still a fraction of a percentage of cases. And this kind of goes back to what's been talked about with Imranj, where you say, well, heck, what do we do? This person's been on an oral bisphosphonate. Well, the risk of them getting osteonecrosis is like 0.003%. And so, yes, there is a risk, but it's not a significant increase that says this is against the standard of care to do these type of things. And, you know, they clearly commented lidocaine is the gold standard because it's been used longer. There's more injections of lidocaine. I get that. But they're also very clear that there is no evidence that articaine in and of itself is below that standard or is known to cause a significant increase in the injuries. And I think we got to keep that in mind, too, is the absolute number of incidents that occur. And clearly, it's going to be very low.
Yes. Yeah, really good point. Okay, this other article, it's called Anesthetic Efficiency of Articaine versus Lidocaine in the Extraction of Lower Third Molars. It's a meta-analysis and systematic review. It's from 2019. So this is more, the title is not a question, but basically they're answering the question, and their hypothesis is articaine, you know, more effective than lidocaine? And that's what they're hypothesizing. But yeah, basically they used also randomized controlled trials. They excluded everything that was a case report, anything non-randomized controlled, any participants who were pregnant. They excluded several other types of groups, trials conducted before 2005, trials in which the injection method used an experimental group and control were completely inconsistent. So seemed to be pretty rigorous as well. They're looking at kind of four different criteria here as far as what they're looking at to judge if articaine is more, you know, quote unquote effective. They're looking at the success rate of anesthesia, the SRA, they call it. So success rate meaning it worked and they didn't have to re-inject is the idea there. And then they're looking at subjective onset time of anesthesia, the objective onset time, the duration of anesthesia. So those kind of four things is what they're looking at to see, you know, is articaine, is it better in all of those areas? Is it, you know, one of those areas, two or three, where does it excel in those areas? Basically, they included 770 lower third molars in 493 patients. 388 had articaine and 382 had lidocaine. And essentially, in regards to success rate of anesthesia, so those, you know, who didn't need repeated injection, they came up with the success rate of articaine to be 1.10 times higher than that of lidocaine. So it doesn't sound way off the charts, but there is significance there that it is significantly higher and more effective that first time around when you're injecting. And then the duration of anesthesia they looked at also was consistent. So the subjective and objective onset time, it said articaine resulted in shorter SOA than lidocaine, but it looked like it was not statistically significant. So it seemed like those two things, subjective and objective, it was kind of hazy there, and it looked like it was not significant. And then the duration time was significant, and it said that it was 0.83 hours longer with articaine. Some interesting kind of things they're measuring and looking at. I mean, that was my takeaway, is that lidocaine is more effective when you're injecting it that first time and a little bit less need to re-inject, and then it lasts longer. What did you get out of this article?
Hey, real quick attention to all residents and fellows who graduated within the last 6 months. KLS Martin is offering one-time sale pricing for newly graduated oral and maxillofacial surgeons. The sale includes discounts on a Bionair Chiro Pro with 5 handpieces, the Spectra G6 headlight, which is awesome, oral surgery instrumentation, and in-office bone graft kit components. This is an incredible deal, so don't forget to ask your KLS reps about this. So please enjoy.
Yeah, I agree again, Grant. I mean, they looked, again, not to recapitulate everything we said about the first article, but again, like you mentioned, it is high level of evidence. They're only looking at RCTs and doing their systematic review and meta-analysis. So this is a good study. They do all the normal things that you would for the PRISMA. And I agree. I mean, they look at this and overall, even though not everything they find is significant, there is some degree of significance for some of those parameters for articaine over lidocaine. And like you said, the effects are maybe small, and this goes back to what's the absolute benefit, and does it in every case provide an absolute benefit? Probably not. But, you know, The subjective success was a little bit better. Onset of anesthesia, maybe a little bit better. And again, talking about duration of action as well. And, you know, the conclusions here are, as you'd expect, that in this case, it looks like articaine performs better in certain parameters. You know, you got to remember too, and they highlight this as well, is this is talking about the standard formulations that we all use, because articaine is 4% and lidocaine is typically 2%. So certainly, you know, that comes into play. But then again, that's what we use. That's what we can purchase. And so we can only compare the things that are actually in use. We can't compare 2% articaine and 2% lidocaine, because that's not what we're able to buy and use. So that caveat is there. But we only should be studying things that are used in clinical practice or are possible. They do note that, you know, articaine is typically more expensive. And so there are a lot of other things, too, that may come into play when you're choosing one over the other. But I think absolutely they've shown that for lower third molar extractions, which was what they were primarily looking at, you know, there may be indeed superior anesthetic efficacy in this, in certain parameters, at least. You know, I'd be interested to hear, Grant, how you incorporate articaine into your practice as compared to lidocaine. Are there certain situations you use it for? Do you always use one or the other? I know that's what a lot of people want to know is, okay, well, I can use both. There's maybe an expense difference between them. I want to know, are there harm differences between them? And based on all this information, what do I do with it? You know, and obviously the intent of these papers is not to dictate how you're supposed to practice. It is dictating what does the evidence say. And are there certain things we absolutely shouldn't be doing? And if that's not the case, well, what information can we gain from this? So I'd be curious to hear how you've used it in your practice over the years.
Yeah, so actually, I was going to ask you that same thing.
Beat
as
you.
Well. But no, so my experience and what I kind of typically do for, you know, in general, this certainly isn't just like we do this for every single patient, but in general, for local anesthesia, patients awake, no sedative drugs are being given. I use septocaine, you know, for the block and the infiltration. So basically two carps, if it's a single tooth usually, or maybe two or three teeth in the same quadrant. But yeah, pretty much locals, I'm doing septocaine. Yeah, a whole other topic is marcaine, because I do use some marcaine. If people are in a lot of pain, you know, if they've been going on for days and days, I usually supplement with marcaine in addition to the septocaine, and that seems to help both while they're in the office and then just longer term pain control. And then I still, for my sedations, do, if it's four third full bonies, usually I'm doing four or five lidocaines and then two marcaines. And I think the reason for that is I feel like, you know, maybe some of it, I don't know, because for me in my setting, I'm not paying for things. And so cost isn't a real big deal for me. But I feel like, yeah, it's lidocaine works. It's quick. They're already sedated. I don't really have that need for articaine in those settings. And so I guess I figure, and I'm doing marcaine as well, so I don't need that additional length of time on the articaine. But certainly these articles show there's not much risk, at least at this low interval. But I think maybe because I was trained to kind of decrease the amount of articaine you give because there's that potential risk of injury. That's probably why I do it for my thirds is lido plus marcaine. What is your protocol?
Yeah, I think that's a very common approach to this, what you described. You know, in general, what I have done in the past is any case that's in the operating room that's under general, because more than anything else of availability, I've used lidocaine and bupivacaine. And or liposomal bupivacaine. I mean, this is mainly because anybody that's been in a surgery center or OR knows that the first thing that everyone gets is lidocaine. It's just readily available. That's why it's the gold standard. It's been used for so long. I don't think there's a huge benefit to switching that, particularly in generally anesthetized patients. Now, I agree with you completely in the setting of local anesthesia or even local anesthesia with a mild or moderate sedation. Articaine has a potentially large benefit, particularly, I think, in cases of failed initial local anesthesia. So, you know, what I in the past have done is sometimes I have used Articaine up front. Other times, what I have done is if I had a failed inferior alveolar nerve block with lidocaine, then what I would do is switch to Articaine and not only perform an additional block with Articaine, but also infiltrate, even for third molars on the buccal and lingual. And, you know, there is some evidence. Dr. James Farrow up at Cincinnati and I updated a chapter on local anesthesia a year ago. And there was some evidence that if you do buccal and lingual infiltration with Articaine, even for third molars, you may have improved anesthesia. And some of that may be thought to be due to perforators coming in and such. You know, Articaine's been a very, very huge benefit in pediatric patients for extractions because the mandible has much thinner cortex. And so you can infiltrate with Articaine and pull out just about anything in a pediatric mandible. It's not necessarily that in the posterior adult mandible where the cortex is so thick. But even in those cases, it has been shown to be better than lidocaine overall in the times where you do need some infiltration as well in a very difficult to anesthetize scenario. So I agree. I certainly don't have any personal qualms about using Articaine. I have never thought from day one that there was evidence to support that this caused a significant increase in the number of parasthetic injuries. Again, on an absolute scale, in reality, if we had all the information that we'll never have, is there an increased risk? Maybe, but on an absolute scale, it's very, very small. And all the evidence we have so far says that it's really quite insignificant. And so I agree. I think no one should hesitate to use Articaine because they are fearful that it will cause a significant increase in nerve injuries. That being said, there are still tons of benefits of using lidocaine, not only availability and price, but just, you know, familiarity with the medication. And I know you and I were talking before, it's the same scenario with me when I was training is Articaine was only used if it absolutely had to be. You had to get authorization to use it from staff. And part of it was due to price, but part of it was due to this fear about the injury. And I don't know what is being taught now in dental schools or in residency programs per se, but certainly, I think if you're being taught that Articaine shouldn't be used for blocks ever, I quite honestly just think that's incorrect at this point.
Yeah, I do too. You know, and it was also interesting, one of the articles pointed out in their discussion that the IAN block is, they quote unquote, you know, highly technique sensitive. And because of that, you know, that they would recommend Articaine because it just is more potent. And, you know, if you're not going to be maybe as accurate as you would with an infiltration, then go with Articaine. I don't know. I work in offices frequently with other providers, you know, that are there, oftentimes general dentists. And it's not an uncommon thing for them to come and get me and say, hey, you know, like I can't anesthetize this patient. Can you do it? And they've given multiple blocks and the patient's feeling everything. And then I'll just do one septocaine block and it's just like lights out, right? And they're totally numb. And I don't know why, but a lot of my general dentists I work with, they're always, their eyes kind of go wide when I'm using septocaine as a block. Like, you know, isn't that bad news and stuff like that? So yeah, these articles, all the frequent ones coming out in the last few years are showing that there's not much of a risk there. And I feel like, to me, that it's causing more trauma to the patient, more issue, more pain if you have to re-inject multiple times, you know, damage to the muscle. So I think it's good for the patient to have a stronger anesthetic and inject the volume once than multiple carpules over and over. I don't know. So that's a whole, you know, another kind of topic, I guess.
I agree completely, Grant. And you know, I think if someone is worried about something standing up medico-legally as well, too, like if they were to have a nerve injury from this, I mean, if you're the unfortunate reality is a lot of people practice based upon medical-legal concerns. But I mean, if you're going to go strictly by medical-legal concerns, using Articaine for blocks is not in any way contraindicated by anything medical-legally sound. You know, I just will make that very clear as well. You don't have to use it. But I agree that people will still look at you funny when you do. And a lot of that's based upon, you know, very deeply ingrained concerns from maybe years ago that they still just feel funny using it. And that's fine. They have the right to feel funny using it, but they really shouldn't from what we know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of it too is making sure you got the right technique, you know, the anatomy of the mandible, you're injecting in the right spot, all that stuff. Yeah. The patient who comes in has a big abscess and they're swollen and, all the tissue's edematous. I mean, to me, that's just more reason to use something more potent
Agree.
when anatomy's kind of obscured and they're, even lingually they're swollen, just stuff like that. I think for me is more reason to use articaine. So not to beat a horse dead here, but I think it's a good local anesthetic and, should be considered by those who are using it in oral surgery settings. Any other comments about articaine?
No, I agree completely, Grant. I know there will still be questions about this. I encourage people to still study this. Are there still new findings we could have? Absolutely. But from everything we know now, it points more and more again that the risk is very low, even if it is significant, very, very low on an absolute scale. And it should be used when needed. And I think it can be used quite liberally. And I agree with everything you've said.
Awesome. All right. Well, per usual, our listeners, could reach out to me. I'll put your contact in the show notes. And if you guys have any other questions or comments, please feel free to reach out. But yeah, we'll catch you on the next episode.
Sounds good, Grant. Thanks as always.
No problem.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Everyday Oral Surgery. For more information on these podcasts, please visit everydayoralsurgery.com. I love feedback and would be very grateful if you would reach out to me via my email, grantstuckey@gmail.com, and let me know what you thought of this episode. Or you can text me at 720-441-6059. Additionally, if you have any topics you'd like to hear about, or if you'd like to be a guest on the podcast, please, please email or text me. I found many of my interviewees through people who have been contacting me and have been listening, and I've gotten so many great ideas for more podcasts, and that's what helps keep the podcast rolling. So really appreciate you making that extra effort and helping me out with feedback and knowing what to do next on the podcast. Thank you so much.